Robert Forster and Grant McClellan of the Go-Betweens have moved back to Brisbane, Australia. I spoke with them earlier this month when they were performing in the U.S. Before we hear from them, let's listen to the opening track from their new CD, Oceans Apart. This is Here Comes a City. So, Grant McClellan, you were from a cattle ranch in Australia, and Robert Forster, your family, a family of workers, not artists. You were the first college-educated person in your family. How much of a stretch was it for both of you to imagine yourselves in the music world, specifically in the rock world?
This is Grant here. For me, it was a real late kind of development in my life, because as Robert knows, we met each other at university, and we're both doing a kind of a theatre course, an arts degree, and theatre was our major. And at the time, all I wanted to do was write films or, write poetry, go and live in Paris, So music, even though I loved it, wasn't something that I did. And Robert actually asked me to form a band, and I couldn't play an instrument. And it wasn't like I was Jared Malanga from the Velvet Underground and could do a whip dance or something, But Bobby obviously saw something in that crystal ball of his. And I said yes. But like Robert, I had never entertained the thought of having a kind of regular job. It just wasn't something that was on my radar. I was too busy thinking about other things.
Robert Forster, what did you hear in Grant McClellan that made you think you should form a band with him?
I've been in bands we hardly played, but I was playing with a friend that I had at university, and we had a schoolboy drummer, and we'd sort of rehearse once a week, once every 2 weeks, and we're doing, like, this is 1975, 76, 77, and we're always trying to find another person in the band, and we couldn't ever find anyone, and my musical tastes were growing away from what the other people in the band wanted to do. Like I was listening to, New York punk and new wave music started to come through and started to really grab my attention. And so I wanted to, I was moving in that direction very strongly. And so I just thought I'd get, Grant was my best friend. And I just thought, he's on my wavelength, and I can, and also he was musical. He it wasn't like he was somebody who had interest in film and poetry, but had no interest in music. He had a great interest in music, and I just thought I'd ask him. It was outside of him. There was no one else. I don't know what else I would have done, because I didn't know anyone else that I could have or would have asked.
So, Grant McLennan, if you hadn't been in a band before and didn't really play music, what did you think your job in the band was supposed to be?
Oh, I thought it would be to design the posters, shoot the films, probably, well, reasonably useless, actually. But the fact that, that one of the first songs that Robert showed me some notes to was Lee Remick. Mm. And that's kind of, this is a very musical term now, it's in 4-4. He just showed me, you know, I could just plonk down on the E sort of note four times and then the B note four times and, you know, sort of thing. So it wasn't that hard initially, but it was like, you know, learning a foreign language. Initially, you're kind of excited, but then the work starts. And I think it was, I could see Robert's ambition, and we both were, I think, in some way quite, you know, subconsciously unhappy with our lives then. Brisbane at that time was a very kind of right-wing, very conservative, very un-arty, not very creative kind of town. So to have a friend like Robert and be talking about Patti Smith and, you know, Arthur Rimbaud's poetry and stuff, it was... it was a very special time.
She comes from Ireland, she's very beautiful. I come from Brisbane and I'm quite plain. She's from the mountains, so close to heaven. Clouds on her shoes, stars on her chest.
Lee Remick, the Go-Betweens' first single, and the Go-Betweens have a new CD, which is called Oceans Apart. One of the things I really like about Lee Remick is the ba-ba-ba-ba-ba stuff. I love pop that has things like that in it. Robert Forster, can you talk about why you put that in?
I think ba-ba-bas have been around since... Well, Chuck Berry didn't have any, but I think from you know, the early 60s or something. It's at that time we were, and we still are, but at that time we were very, very pop saturated, just completely in love with the idea of pop in terms of Los Angeles, you know, like 1963 to 1966, you know, just very sort of sun-soaked pop aesthetic was in the band.
And why did you want to write a song about the actress Lee Remick?
Well, at that time, I wanted to write a, you know, I was very sort of conceptual, I guess, in a way, in what I was doing at that time. I was trying to write types of songs. I was trying to write, and I thought, okay, I'm going to write a love song. And I didn't have a girlfriend, and so I thought, okay, you know, got to go to stage two. You know, got to find somebody. And she was someone I always found really attractive, and I found really great. And there just must have been a succession of her films on TV in Brisbane, and I just thought she looked really great, and especially in the 60s, I think that they were the films that I was seeing, and so I wrote about her. I just liked the look of her and the way she was on TV.
So Grant, did you learn to play bass on this song?
I did. I did. And actually, I think anyone out there listening can hear me learning to play bass on it. I don't think I'm going to get a gig in L.A. Yeah.
So this was, you know, singles were, as far as I know, not making a real big impact on music sales in 1978, and the top 40 was, I think, pretty meaningless by then. So yeah. What impact did you expect to have by making a single, and what impact did you have?
Well, the impact, there was another band in our town called The Saints, and... They'd made a single called I'm Stranded, and what the concept was, it's like if you're making a single and you're a band right in the middle of, you know, the Midwest and you're in a small town, you if it's good enough, if it's an instant classic, which is what I'm going to call Lee Remick, you hope that it's just going to spring you right out of town. It just means that one day a Learjet's going to land down and you're just going to walk in and you're just going to leave the town that you grew up in behind. That was the concept.
It didn't work, did it?
No, it didn't. It didn't, but it sort of filtered. It sort of had this weird long afterlife, and it resulted in me meeting Lee Remick in Sydney in the mid '80s. It sort of ended up
you
in a
met
record
her?
Shop. Yeah, and she was out in Australia in 1986 making a film, and someone that worked on the film in the art department knew the band from the late '70s, from 1978. She used to come and see us play. And she was working on the film, and she knew that we were in town. And so, yeah, I went down and met her, which was, you know, extraordinary, you know, to write a song, you know, out of these circumstances that we're talking about now, you know, in 1978. And then eight years later, you meet the movie star that you wrote about.
So when you started recording, how did you see yourselves? Like, how did you want to, like, define yourselves musically and with your image, and where did you see yourself fitting in?
We saw ourselves fitting in as a band that we weren't normal rock and rollers. You know, we weren't two guys that, you know, had every Chuck Berry licked down, had cigarettes dangling out of the side of our mouths, and had, you know, like Rod Stewart haircuts. You know, we'd sort of come from this un-rock and roll background, and we'd sort of been in university, and we had a very, very strong interest in pop culture, you know, in Gilligan's Island, in Mod Squad, you know, at the same time doing literature, you know. It was sort of this weird mixture, and we thought that was interesting in terms of being a rock band or a pop band and having that background, you know, like, and this was a time in the late 70s when a lot of people that normally weren't in rock bands, I mean, look, you know, someone like the Talking Heads, you know, like they were students, you know, at design school at Rhode Island, you know, it was that sort of concept. It was sort of, instead of, you know, there was 10 million bands in the world that could play Led Zeppelin, you know, licks. There was, you know, 10 million bands that could do Jimmy Page and Chuck Berry and The Who, and all of that. And we just sort of, not consciously, but just because the way we were, we just wanted to do something that was different. So, you know, like, we sort of liked bands like the Monkees, you know. we liked, you know, Dylan 64, 66, you know, like, we were fixated on that, you know, on Dylan as sort of, you know, amphetamine-driven pop star. You know, that's what we were interested in, and also, you know, television and Talking Heads, and it was like people that normally weren't in rock and roll being in rock and roll and seeing where it would go.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Grant McLennan and Robert Forster, the founders of the band The Go-Betweens. The band was formed in Brisbane, Australia in the late 70s and developed a cult following. They broke up in 1990, but McLennan and Forster reunited 10 years later. They've just released their third CD since reuniting. It's called Oceans Apart. The Go-Betweens have always gotten, like, really terrific reviews from critics, but the band's had a devoted following, but not an enormous following. Was it ever hard during the years you've been together to stay afloat financially?
Definitely, especially towards the end of the 80s, where we were doing a lot of touring, and record companies were sinking money into us, and we were foolish enough to take it. Although there's an argument about that, but. And so we sort of, trying to keep five people on the road and touring was very, very difficult. In a way it was a background reason to why we broke up at the end of the 80s. It was like Grant and I having to, you know, another publishing advance, another record company advance, money, obviously you have to pay back. And, this was a time in the very late 80s where financially it was enormously difficult.
So is that what you mean by it was foolish? It was foolish to take the money from the record companies because then it made you more in hock than
there's two lines on taking money from record companies.
Yes, please.
There's the yes, please one, and which then people, you know, like build studios and people spend the money from the record company knowing they're not going to stay with, well, knowing that the record company's going to drop them, so you try and get as much as you can, and you build things with it. The other line is don't take much money, and the record company will then look at the sheet and go, well, you know, they're only $50,000 in debt, we won't drop them. You know, like, you play it both ways, and there's endless discussions in band rooms and management, rock management courses about what you should do. You know, you either take the money and run, or you don't take so much money and you hope that you stay.
And so what was your strategy?
Well, being the go-betweens was a mess. So it seemed to be, now in terms of, say, like tour support, like I'll give you a figure. Like we toured with REM, like in Europe in 1989, and we're in Australia, and you know, and that cost us something like say 5 weeks on the road with them. That cost us £35,000, which is, you know, like, I don't know, 50,000-60,000 American dollars, and that's money that we have to pay off the rest of our lives that went in 5 weeks.
And why do you have to pay that?
How come
you're not making money? How come you're paying money to open for R.E.M.?
Well, that was a particular thing. I mean, that's you know, you're opening for a big band. The big band gets the money, you know. And that's why most tour support actually goes with to bands who get on the bill to play with a big band. Like if we suddenly got a call that said, you know, like U2 wants you to do 4 weeks of their tour, like right now. We couldn't afford it, so we'd have to go to a record company and go, okay, you know, and then it's the whole game of, is it worth it? It is, because we have to stay in hotels, we have to fly to make the shows. And so it gets in that whole, that's often where the money goes, is supporting big bands.
Huh. And so the point of doing it in the first place would be to reach the opening act's audience, in this case to reach REM's audience, and hope that they're going to love you and then buy your records, and You'll not only be able to pay back what you owe, you'll start becoming really popular.
Exactly. That's the concept. You will sell a certain amount of records and your profile will be raised that will justify the amount of money that is being spent on doing that exercise. Mm-hmm. And I would say 80% of the time it fails.
So you must get to really hate the system.
No, not at all. No, I mean, we're realists, you know. I mean, we know that the music that we do is not music that a lot of people are going to put our posters up on their bedroom walls. You know, it's we're into a different kind of thing, and we always have. The galling thing, though, is Robert was talking about it before. We really do like pop music.
I was going to say, let me play a song that I think illustrates how, like, you're pop, but not just pop, or a little different than pop. And I'm thinking of People Say, which is on, in the first printing of your new CD, there's an EP that comes with it that includes live performances, and one of them is of the song People Say. Maybe you don't think it belongs in that category.
No.
I think you've nailed it right on the head.
Yeah, People Say is Bob Dylan meets the Monkees.
Something that used to happen all the time, in fact.
Oh, if only he'd met the Monkees. He met the birds, but if he'd met the Monkees. Can't you imagine Bob the Fifth Monkey in the house? 1966, the hair, shades. Davy!
Well, why don't we hear People Say, and this is from an EP that comes with the first printing of the Go-Betweens' new CD, Oceans Apart.
You've got your improved. Say I'm mad to want.
this is on an EP that comes with the first pressing of your new CD, Oceans Apart. So, you know, the band broke up after 11 years and then reunited in, was it 2000 or 2001?
2000.
How have your ambitions changed in terms of what you want or expect from the band now?
Oh, that's a good question. I think in a way differently when you're in your 20s. Even if you're playing like free jazz, you still think it could end up in the top 30. You know, you've still got that idea that you will be in Billboard. It's just something that just goes with you. Just you know, like, and as Grant said before, we are writing pop music. This is sort of it has the whiff and the look of something that's accessible, and so which has always drawn record companies to us, and so we. So that's floating around in your mind in your 20s, but overall, I don't think it's ever. I don't think it's changed all that much. It's still once you're actually, you know, like, just, you know, on the focus of writing songs, the focus of recording them well, the focus of touring. That takes up a lot of space in your mind, and so it's not. Other things don't sort of crouch in too much. I think really, we hit on this just a little bit before. I think I've always thought in terms of success for the band, in terms of like a breakthrough, it was always going to come with a lucky break. It's a song in a film. It's someone covering one of our songs.
Mm-hmm.
It's we need someone.
Except Michael Bublé.
someone who's just. A big writer, you know, like someone will, it'll come that way, as opposed to us spending 2 years on the road and all the commercial rock stations falling over and playing our music. I don't think it's going to happen that way. I never have really thought for a long time. I think it's going to come through a lucky break.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you both so much for talking with us.
Thanks, Terry.
Terry, it's been very, very nice. Thank you very much.
Robert Forster and Grant McLennan of the Go-Betweens. Their new CD is called Oceans Apart.